They say that good things come to those that wait, but sometimes you're just an eager little puppy and you want to talk about the latest news. Welcome to All About Symbian's Insight number 116, a couple of days early in honour of Nokia actually getting the N8 publicly out there on display, being talked about. Now, how could we not just take that riot of emotion and enthusiasm that's bubbling up for Nokia's latest hardware and just, you know, see how long Rafe can talk about it without hesitation, repetition or deviation. There we go. Hello, I'm Ewan Spence. Welcome, as I said, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. Joining me, as we've already mentioned, Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
And we also have Steve Litchfield.
Hello there.
And Steve will be talking for 60 seconds on the subject of camera. We will all be talking for 30 minutes or so on the Nokia N8. If you're looking for the regular insight of news and views, we'll return to that next week because the N8 is quite a keystone device. For those of you out there who are under a rock or living in Azerbaijan, this is what you've missed. Rafe, tell us about the N8.
Yes, the Nokia N8. This is Nokia's first Symbian 3 device. But the real excitement in this monoblock touch form factor, I think, is around the camera. That's 12 megapixels, HD recording capable, 720p. It's also got 16 gigabytes of mass memory, the micro SD card slot, HDMI out, Dolby sound out as well, FM transmitter, integrated GPS, Bluetooth 3.0, USB on the go, BG and N Wi-Fi. In other words, lots and lots of hardware. But I think the exciting thing here for people is that this is a new Nokia device running on the Symbian platform that's at the higher end of the device spectrum. It's the first for Nokia in terms of the 720p recording, a first in terms of the Symbian 3, first in terms of an upgraded third generation chipset architecture, and it's been attracting a lot of attention as well because of its design. It's an aluminium body with a glass screen, capacitive screen, OLED screen as well, and I think this device is the one that is sort of really capturing people's attention and bringing Nokia back towards the high end of the smartphone device market.
Okay, and just let it be known for the record, we actually had Rafe do that all under 60 seconds. We will get him on just a minute if it kills us by the end of the year. It's an impressive hardware list, even more impressive that the retail price is incredibly low when you look at what you're actually getting in this device. And Steve, I think that's what's caught a lot of commentators. They were expecting a spec sheet that was going to be kind of like this. I think Nokia slightly over-delivered on the specifications, but they've seriously over-delivered on the price point, haven't they?
Yes, I'm now frantically scanning down our news story to find the price. Rafe, do you know off the top of your head?
Yes, it's €370. That is, of course, before tax and subsidies. That's £320 or about $499. You can add your local tax to that, but of course, that is a launch price and that will come down. By way of comparison, the N97 is €550, so almost a third more expensive again.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing, really. And although it's not absolute top-end specs in terms of the top-end flagships, things like the Sony Ericsson X10 with 4-inch screen, the HTC Touch HD2, again, 4.3-inch screen. So we're talking about something that's kind of N97-sized here with a 3.5-inch screen. But having said that, things like there's a lot of Nokia first, things like the 256 megabytes of RAM. Yes, Sony Ericsson and Samsung have done that in their previous top-end Symbian phones. But this is the first for Nokia. As you say, it's the first Symbian 3. The camera is undoubtedly what grabbed my attention. I think it's really the heart and soul of this device is the camera and the camera screen combination. If I can just run through the basic specs of the camera, if you want more detail, and do look up my detailed features on allaboutsymbian.com this week. I've gone into quite a lot of detail. But just to run down the basic specs, Xenon flash at long last. I can stop my rants. People can stop being bored by my rants because it's finally there. And hopefully, just on the N82, Nokia do Xenon right. They did it once right before. This is going to be strike two, and it'll be utterly splendid. A very large sensor. It's the largest camera sensor, as far as I know, ever put into a cell phone. It's rated at 1 over 1.83, and that's as large as some of the better standalone compact cameras out there. Individual sensor pixels are 47% bigger than anything in other competing 12-megapixel phones from anybody. Carl Zeiss optics, of course, fixed aperture lens. It's not variable aperture, but because of the extra large sensor, it's not a problem. Extra software enhancements in terms of speed, using the speed of the device. So autofocus time is now down to under half a second, which again is very comparable to standalone cameras. the stereo audio recording at last. Just like on the old N93, we've got front and back microphones here giving you a complete ambient sound. So if you listen to the soundtrack back on, for example, headphones to a recorded video, it really sounds like you're there, apparently. The microphones are digital, as in the N86, not analog, as on most other phones. So you get very, very crisp, very, very adaptable sound recording at all amplitudes, all volumes. There's this a new active hyperfocal distance system, which I won't explain here, but it basically means you get great depth of field and most light conditions without having to do explicit focusing. It's full HD video capture. The Samsung and the Sony Ericsson Vivas both take HD video capture and do it slightly clunkily. We're hoping that this is going to be Nokia doing it right. And, of course, looking forward to testing that in the summer. The same intelligent digital zoom as the N86. You can zoom in while you're filming up to three times with no blockiness, no artificial pixelation. So you get the same effect as on the old Nokia N93, which was optical three times zoom. This is digital, but it's digital done right again, so that should be pretty impressive. So all in all, that's a massive spec sheet for the camera. It is the heart and soul of the device, and I'm really looking forward to testing it.
Wait, one question I have, Steve, is when you look at cameras, I know Canon have recently got something like the S6 to the S90, which was sort of a high-end compact camera, but less than an SLR. And the spec sheet on the N8 is almost identical to this Canon camera that's coming in at about the €450 mark.
Yes, there's one big caveat in terms of the specs and the actual results you'll get is that the fact that a cell phone has to be reasonably thin. I mean, I think we're talking about 13, 14 millimetres, Rafe?
I think we're talking 12.9 millimetres.
Okay, so that is pretty thin. There's no way you get a compact camera that thin. And because of the thinness, the optics are reduced in size. The sensor may be large, but the lens is physically quite small. It's kind of a think pinhole cameras, whereas a compact standalone camera can have a much larger lens. So you will get, in most non-favorable light conditions, you get better results from a standalone camera. But in normal light conditions, in good light, in sunlight, and of course with the xenon flash in at nighttime, in reasonably close quarters, for example, in a party or a disco, I think the N8 will still do a pretty darn good job.
Yeah, the camera is pretty amazing. I think what the important point here really is that it gets very close to replacing completely, I think, the sort of happy snap style camera, you know, the digital compact. Why would you carry the extra device around with you? If you're shooting in special conditions, absolutely, I think you still may want a standalone. But obviously, we have to wait for the proof in the pudding. But given the cost factor, I also think it's going to seriously compete against some of the sort of cheap HD cameras and also things like the flip device for taking video on the go quickly, especially when you consider this is a connected device and it does also have the HDMI out, which adds another string to the video dimension, doesn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I haven't actually got any HDMI-compatible devices. I have to confess to being very old school here at Litchfield Towers, but yeah, I'm sure you can test it at your end.
I think it's the justification to buy that HDTV, as far as I'm concerned. I've been holding off for a while, but there we go. I'll have to buy it for work on the site. Absolutely.
So sure you can get it as a tax break on it.
Absolutely. So thinking about the hardware, it's worth pointing out also, I think, some stuff about the CPU and the memory. People have been asking about the processor, and the information that Nokia released on this is that this is an ARM 11 running at 680 megahertz, but it's also very importantly got a graphics coprocessor. So what does that actually mean? Well, that means 3D graphics hardware acceleration and OpenGL ES 2.0 support. That's important for both things like decoding and encoding video, but also in some of the more graphically intensive games and indeed things like transitions and sort of fancy UI on the UI side of things. So that graphics processor is going to be very important in terms of adding both speed and eye candy to the UI. People have been asking, is this a Cortex A8? Well, it's not officially that. Nokia haven't sort of talked about where the processor is coming from in terms of the company or the particular model that it is. But I think we can assume that it's a similar system on a chip. And actually with this ARM 11 and the graphics coprocessor, it's very similar to the Cortex A8 bundle, which is built on a very similar basis. So whether it is or not, you can expect a similar performance. And Nokia have said that some of the frame rates running through the UI are around 60 frames per second at the moment. And that compares to the current, which is about 25. It does depend, obviously, what they're looking at. So the promise that Nokia made back at their Nokia Capital Markets Day of about a 3x performance improvement does seem to be holding up. And that's due both to the processor and also, of course, the underlying Symbian 3, which has multiple improvements at the sort of the performance in the lower levels. We should also mention the fact it's got 256 megabytes of RAM. The other thing to note here is it's actually more than 256 megabytes of RAM on an older device, and this is because Symbian 3 supports better memory management. And the actual details that you need to know here are that it supports writable demand paging. What that means is more applications can take advantage of demand paging, so therefore effectively RAM use by those applications, particularly when they're in the idle state, will be less because they can write extra memory to effectively things like the internal memory and the flash memory rather than having to use the actual RAM. So that should, in theory at least, mean that it's possible to multitask literally hundreds of applications. We've already seen some recent videos showing Symbian phones multitasking lots of applications, but really the advantage for this comes on things like big web pages and also within the Qt applications, something we'll come back to later. So although some people have been commenting that they'd like to see more RAM, actually I think you'll find that there's a double performance boost here, both because it's doubling the RAM that Nokia has been putting in devices, and also this, as I say, writable demand paging gives even more. It's not really possible to say what it's equivalent to, but I would suspect that this is probably equivalent to 512 megabytes of RAM on equivalent competing devices. So sort of good news really in the processor and the memory department. I guess the other thing to talk about really is that, you know, Steve was saying the camera is sort of the big new thing. Actually, I think it's probably fair to say that that is the biggest single piece of innovation. And it's interesting to see people have been taking a look at the N8 and saying, there's not much innovation here. That's mainly because they're looking at the UI. That itself is mistaken, but we'll get back to that later. But I think the camera is just one part of the innovation. I think you could also look at things like Bluetooth 3.0. It's one of the first devices to support that. Why is that interesting? Well, that's low-power Bluetooth devices, which is, in theory, things like being able to connect to smart running shoes or other low-power Bluetooth devices. We'll talk about that more in the future. It's also got a fairly unique characteristic, which is USB on the go. And again, I think this is a first for a sort of a mainstream smartphone anyway. It was available in the N810, I believe. But what this means is you'll be able to, using a cable which will be in the box, plug your N8 into a USB memory stick or indeed an external hard drive, as long as it's a USB one, obviously, and you'll be able to access as you would any other drive. So effectively, it becomes what's known as a USB host rather than being a USB slave device. That's what it is when it's connected to a PC. So that has some quite interesting implications because, of course, you could take a camera, for example, which generally mount themselves as USB mesh storage devices, plug it into the N8 and look at your photos that you may have taken on another device or another media player and use that on the N8 screen or indeed via the HDMI out onto a TV. Incidentally, for the HDMI out, it upscales videos and pictures to sort of the full HDMI resolution, and within the UI itself it will also output the full UI, but that will obviously be upscaled because the native screen resolution is 640 by 360. So that USB on the go is an interesting example. At the moment, they're saying the use cases are just for memory storage, i.e. hard disks, which may need an external power because the N8 is obviously limited in the power it can provide, and memory sticks. But potentially in the future, at least, it would be possible to see things like keyboards and drivers coming in if people are willing to do the work on the drivers. But I should add that's not supported yet. I think it's also worth looking at something like the Wi-Fi that's got the N. That's one of the first times we've seen that on a available on a smartphone. I'd also point towards the five bands on the radio. Now, this means it's a true world 3G phone. So those bands are 850, 900, 1700, 1900 and 2100. Again, as far as I'm aware, this is one of the first mainstream smartphones to support this sort of quint band 3G, if you like. And that means it supports both the sort of WCDMA carriers in the States, both T-Mobile and AT&T, in a single device. And previously there haven't been very many Symbian devices or Nokia devices available on the T-Mobile bands. It's also got the usual H stuff, but that's a really significant achievement in terms of the engineering, because tuning your aerials such that they can receive on all five bands is actually quite difficult as a challenge, which is why we haven't seen some of this before. I think it's also worth pointing out that all of this stuff is part of Nokia's new hardware platform, so we're very likely to see this on other devices as well. That's just a few of the other hardware highlights. As I say, there are other things as well. I mean, you might look at things like the capacitive screen, which is the first for Nokia, but they're also putting a capacitive stylus in the device, which you don't see very often. That's to support handwriting recognitions in markets like China. And Nokia also catching up in things like the location department, where sort of Wi-Fi positioning is going to be available out of the box. I'd also point towards just what they managed to squeeze it into. The 130mm times 59mm times 12.9mm is really quite small. And when you see this in the hand, I think a lot of people are going to be really surprised. It's 135 grams in weight. That's partly due to the aluminium. And because it's aluminium, that means it's anodized, which will make the sort of materials on the casing much more scratch resistant. We've seen that already on something like the E52 and the E55. The one fly in the ointment, I think, here is that the battery, 1200 milliamp hours, we might discuss that later whether that's sufficient, is actually non-user replaceable. Now, my understanding of this is there are screws in the device, so in theory you can take it apart and replace it, but what it means is there's not going to be casual replacement of just flipping off the back camera cover, and replacing the battery. So those of you who very often use two batteries during a day, if they're heavy users, may be a bit disappointed here. Is it a big deal? Well, I think it's not the best thing, but Apple have clearly shown that consumers are quite happy to have a battery that isn't user replaceable. And the difference here is I think it's probably going to be more possible for people to replace it at home. We'll have to wait and see till we get the actual device in our hands on that. But I think that's probably one of the downsides. The other downside that people have been talking about is the software, but I think we'll get onto that a bit later because I think there's been some confusion around that. So I think it's probably time to hand over back to the host, Ewan, to find out what we're going to be talking about next.
I think Nicholas Parsons just called and said that invitation has been rescinded.
I'm very sorry, Ewan.
Right then.
New program, just an hour.
Indeed. I just want to note for the record, we are doing this on Thursday morning. I've just missed the opportunity to listen to Britain's new remix of our Eurovision song on Radio 2 to listen to Rafe. That either says how rubbish our song is or how exciting the N8 is. I shall leave that to the listener to decide. But what has been interesting, we've talked obviously about the in-depth stuff, the specs of, to be honest, the sort of stuff that fanboys go over. And what's interesting to me has been the reaction online, the fact that the sort of snap judgments, both from the leak that came out on Monday, but also through the official announcements on Tuesday, and then the slow realization of what was actually in the N8. There was a new sort of snap judgment was, oh, it's another Nokia. It's almost similar to the X6, for example. You know, it's got the screen, it's got capacitive, it's got various stuff. But then as people started to look at it, they started to see the samples of the HD video coming out, the images coming out, and looking at stuff like the USB, like the Quinn band, which just sounds like something Manfred Mann did in 1976 with Quinn the Eskimo. There was this sort of slow turnaround in the blogosphere of, actually, the N8's pretty important. The N8's actually pretty, oh, wow. Oh, we still like our phones that we have over here, but this is looking quite nice now. And I'm wondering if the long lead time from Nokia announcing now to Nokia actually releasing the hardware in September is going to allow everybody else to catch up with the fanboys and those that are in the know of the enthusiasm of the N8. I mean, Steve, do you see that this is a long PR campaign from Nokia that could be a PR campaign done right?
It's certainly been done right this week. From the way they handled the leak and then responded to that, from the way they did the launch, from the way they've been really on top of all the different comments coming through. As you say, the problem will now be the long, what, 3 or 4 months between launch and availability. I'm hoping that this is mirroring the N93, for example, which came out in 2006. Again, it was announced quite early, about 6 or 7 months before in that case. But it started to come out through people like the sites like All About Symbian and other camera-focused bloggers and sites. And they kind of built the buzz up again towards in a month or so before it was actually available. I'm assuming that something similar could happen this time. I know Nokia are a lot tighter now about how possible distribution of pre-production hardware, but I'm really hoping that they can carry on this sort of excellent job in the summer months leading up to an August or September launch and try and build that buzz up again. But certainly the price, I think, as you say, people have been kind of won over by the details and the specifications when they really look closely, and then they hit the bottom line, which is the price, and they think, wow, this is 30 or 40% below what I expected. You know, when everyone saw the N8's specifications listed online and the list of features, you thought, okay, well, this is Nokia taking the next step forward. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah, this is going to be, you know, 450, maybe £479 SIM-free. And then look at the price. And they think, that's going to come out at just over £300. This is staggering. I want one. And that I think that's just mind-blowing. That really, really swung a lot of people around for me.
The other thing to point out is Nokia's social media team. They fed this, and they fed it like a fire. They just kept on throwing something else throughout the days. That, you know, they had the initial blog post. They had a blog post about the camera. They were providing YouTube videos. There was sort of staged announcements throughout a sort of 48-hour period. And Rafe, I mean, we've talked before about Nokia's social media strategy and wondering how they can use it. Again, this seems to be Nokia have turned a corner and went, oh, we know how to feed a social media fire now.
I think there's still work to do, because clearly there's the way Nokia is pursued in the media, and that was, as you said, shown in some of the initial posts around it. But yes, I do think they've done a good job in sort of reaching out, explaining some of the extra detail, or if you like, the story behind the device, and that's absolutely what's needed to turn people around. I think in terms of the sort of the gap between announcing and sort of being available on the market is almost inevitable for a Nokia product, because of the way they do business, in terms of they have to let this device out to operators to start doing testing and things like that. And it's a sort of slightly different model to particularly Apple, I think it would be fair to say. And so we'd already seen various N8 leaks, and so an announcement had to come sooner rather than later. And after all, we're actually talking about, you know, probably 3 months, maybe 4 months. And this compares to the bad old days, where it could be 6 to 8 months from sort of announcing a device to it actually being available in any significant numbers. I mean, if you think back to something like the N95 even, you know, that wasn't that far off, 6 months really before it became available. In terms of the price point, I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's also notable that this isn't the highest number that it could possibly be. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the multiple Symbian 3 devices that OPK referred to in the Nokia earnings call includes one with a QWERTY keyboard. And actually, personally, I think that shows off Symbian 3 at its very best in that kind of hybrid device, because there's still problems around the sort of text input, especially compared to some of the competing devices, I think. And that may become more apparent once we actually, you know, see devices being tested by people outside of Nokia. But yes, you're right. I think there has been a sort of step up in terms of the attention being paid to this device. But on the other hand, I don't think it's all that surprising, given that, you know, this is Nokia, who are sort of past masters in terms of being able to produce really innovative hardware. But it is good to see them stepping up in the social media part. And I think Nokia Conversations deserve a lot of credit for helping to reshape the conversation on the web after what was a fairly unfortunate leak as far as Nokia were concerned, where a lot of people were sort of saying it's been announced, but the first review that's been seen on the web is, you know, not a good one. And it's come around, as you said, they released the HD video, and immediately there was sort of a follow-on story saying, actually, this is pretty amazing on a device. And then people looked at the pricing. And Symbian will be pleased as well, because also Symbian 3 was sort of getting mentioned, some in a good light, some in a bad light. But it is interesting to see how this has evolved, and let's certainly compare it to something like, I would say, maybe the X6, which didn't really manage to make quite so much of an impact.
Yeah, and Symbian 3, of course, as you've mentioned there, is the other big feature of the N8. And I know a lot of people have talked about the UI and how it's not that different, and it's similar to the 5th edition, but it consolidates everything. I mean, I've got two views on that. The first one is that it's not going to be different, but the fact is that everything will probably just work. It'll be single tap everywhere, so you won't notice the changes. You'll just go, it's exactly the same, where in actual fact, it's the same, but everything works. But the main one for me is the OS, Symbian Root 3, is so much more than a UI layer. I mean, we're talking about a CPU speed that's slower than the Android phones. Yeah, I don't think we're going to notice because of the use of the tight use on the CPU of Symbian, all the hardware possibilities. Symbian 3 under the hood is a massive, massive change. And for people to dismiss that just because, oh, it's another UI with icons, I think is one of the disservices so far. And I don't think that there'll be the same sort of acceptance of Symbian 3 as there has been of the N8 turnaround on the commentary blocks. Because, Rafe, there's a huge change under the hood here. It's almost from a ground-up rewrite.
Absolutely. There are some very, very big changes, particularly under the hood. In fact, the irony, really, of Symbian 3 is really that people have been talking about Nokia's need to refresh the UI. And really, it's an evolution of the UI in Symbian 3, and the big UI changes are taking place in Symbian 4, which is coming next year. It's not to say there's nothing going on in the UI, but actually some of the biggest changes in Symbian 3, I would say, are really under the hood in terms of performance changes, but also some of the capabilities in the middleware. But just talking a little bit about the UI, you know, for people who are writing this off as exactly the same, I think probably aren't paying enough attention. It looks very similar in many ways. There are some notable additions. You're quite right on the sort of direct UI paradigm. This is going to be single touch, and I think that will make an enormous difference in terms of usability. But you also look at things like the multiple home screen, the multiple page home screen. There's going to be 3 pages, 6 widgets per page, which gives you a great deal of customization, and I think will potentially change the way people use the device, because you'll be able to do an awful lot more from the home screen rather than jumping into the application screen. You can also look at things like the re-architected graphics architecture. That's both 2D and 3D, and one of the places that's taken advantage of is in the music player, which has a sort of new, I think, Coverflow-esque where looking at album art, but also in terms of tracks. And it's also used elsewhere in the UI as well. Another example, for example, would be the visual task switcher, which essentially gives you the familiar task switcher, but you get sort of thumbnails of the applications as you swipe through them as a way of I think, making the multitasking more visually appealing, but also more obvious to users when they, you know, hold down the application key. There's also things in terms of the streamlined menu structure, so there's actually less hanging off multiple menus, and it's part really of the single tap paradigm as well. But you can also look at some of the other bits and pieces, like there's an updated web runtime, there's support for Flashlight 4. That effectively means you get Flash 10 video support. So, for example, it would be possible to play back Facebook videos, which hasn't been the case up until this point. And we could go on and on. There's also things like gesture support, for example. That means it's used, I believe, in the camera application, for example, for doing zooming when you're in video. There's also multi-touch, which you can pinch to zoom in things like the camera application, but also the image application. Relatively speaking, the multi-touch has been implemented in a limited way, but it is open to third-party developers through APIs, and so I think we might see the most innovation on multi-touch really from third-party developers. I think we'll see the full blossom of it really in Symbian 4, but it does sort of do a checkbox in terms of the sort of most popular, I guess, multi-touch gesture. And as I say, the support is there. But looking at Symbian 3 in a little bit more detail, I think it's things like the support for HDMI at the system level, which means it's not just outputting, you know, videos and images as is typical on other devices that have HDMI out. This means you can put the whole operating system out onto your TV screen, you know, in very high resolution. There's changes in the Bluetooth profile support. I mentioned Bluetooth 3 earlier, but just to give you another example, it now supports the audio-visual remote control profile 1.4. That actually means you get potentially the ability to look at playlists on your Bluetooth stereo headphones, the ability to do limited search to control multiple devices at the same time. There's also changes in the networking. For example, it's now got the one-click connectivity, which people have been complaining about for a long time. It's the end of all those annoying dialogues. But actually, there's a lot more in the underlying thing. The whole networking there has been rewritten. We've got, for example, smart network management. That means, and it's referred to as a three-plane comms in sort of the Symbian literature. So an application is actually able to tell the operating system what sort of requirements it has, e.g. its high bandwidth, which is needed for, say, speedy video upload. or jitter control. That's something like a smooth playback of internet radio. And the system will actually balance the sort of connectivity and give you the best possible overall experience. So that will lead to much better perceptions of user experience, even if it's not a particularly visual thing. I think you could also look at the things like the peer-to-peer support, which is, again, all available through the middleware, but potentially making some very interesting applications. We should also talk about something like Qt 4.6. That's now an integral part of the platform. That's going to allow for much easier application development. It also allows for compatibility across to the Migo platform and the desktop, so a great deal more developers coming in and a better developer experience as part of that. Nokia have launched the Nokia Qt SDK, which makes development a lot more easy. I think we'll talk about that more in a future podcast because it's one that's worth coming back to in detail, but perhaps not of so much interest to consumers, aside from the fact that you'll get much more WYSIWYG-looking applications and more of them. Changes for enterprises, there's support for remote contact lookup, there's CalDAV support. Why is CalDAV support important? That means you can directly sync with, for example, the Google calendar service, and there's support for multiple calendars. There's support for more languages than any other platform out of the box, 40 plus localizations. There's the first stage of things like Shai and the multi-core support I've already mentioned, writable demand paging. There's even things like support for hardware acceleration of cryptographic algorithms. Why is that important? Well, a lot of content that's delivered either streaming or in other ways is often has DRM in it. It's an inevitable part of the world, and if you have that kind of thing, it has better battery life and better performance on playback. And I haven't gone into all the details here, obviously, but that gives you just a flavour of some of the improvements that are going on in Symbian 3. And so I think people who dismiss Symbian 3 out of hand should probably take a better look both at the UI in terms of, you know, how does it change the perception for most people. You know, yes, you could argue that it's bringing it up to parity with existing platforms and there's still work to be done. I think that's true. You know, this is evolutionary, not revolutionary, you know, waiting for Symbian 4. But I think it gets it to the point where the UI will become less of an issue for why people don't buy the device, and that allows some of the other features to shine through, particularly in terms of the hardware innovation, but also some of the other things. And I think the important point is possibly Symbian is better able to deliver on some of the cutting edge cases, and that will obviously remain to be seen. There's just one more thing I want to say about Symbian 3, and then I'll hand back over to Ewan. Symbian 3 really comes from the age, and bear in mind it's been in development for, you know, a number of years. It really comes from the age where smartphones were still about reducing the bill of materials, you know, getting them cheaper. And that will become more apparent in time. Nokia have already said that the first of their Symbian 3 devices are going to be towards the higher end, but it will get passed down lower and later. But Symbian 3 builds on the work of earlier Symbian versions in that it will be able to power devices which are even cheaper to build. And obviously, that's not relevant to the N8, but a lot of the functionality I've been talking about applies just as much. You know, it's in the platform, which means it's available to every Symbian 3 device. And Symbian 3 really was, to say, about optimizations, about making things more efficient. And the next version of Symbian is actually, I think, going to be more about some of the, you know, the eye candy or the high-end stuff. So in one sense, it's inevitable that Symbian 3 didn't quite move with the pattern of the market, but there's a lot that has gone on. So to write it off altogether, I think, is short-sighted, and there'll be content on the site discussing this in more detail, because obviously it's going to be very important going forward for all the Symbian users, all of the ecosystem.
Indeed, yes. And yes, not only has a Nicholas Parsons taken back the invitation, so has Clement Freud from beyond the grave. The point is, though, is there's so much to talk about the N8. We're coming up on time as it is just now. But just very briefly, if you've any questions on the N8 or if you've any issues that you'd like us to address in the next Insight, which, as I said, this is going to keep us going for months, drop us an email or on Twitter at All About Symbian. We don't even have at All About Symbian, or do we? I don't know. Anyway, at AAS, at Ewan, at Steve Litchfield, or at Rafe Blanford. Emails welcome as always, rafe@allaboutsymbian.com, and everybody else. And you can leave your comments on the website. We will pick them up. Any questions that you have, on the whole ecosystem that's going to spring up and be built on from Nokia and the Symbian Foundation going forward, very much this is the sort of first brick. We've had the foundations built up. Now we can see the house start to be getting built. We don't know what the house is going to look like at the end, but at the same point, what we do know is we do know what the houses on the rest of the street are going to be. N8, as we said, due out in Q3. It is going to enter a market that's much more competitive than Nokia has ever entered before. Android will have a range of new devices. The iPhone 4G, or whatever they decide to call it, is going to be out there as well. Steve, I know with the phones, so that you take a much more proactive look at the sort of breadth of the market. Is it a direct comparison to other phones? Is it going to be able to stand out on its own, or is this just Nokia just muscling up to the line and going, we've got exactly the same as everybody else?
I think just from looking at this pure form factor, I mean, as a tablet form factor, 3.5-inch OLED screen, capacitive touch, harbor acceleration, fast processor, lots of RAM, it's a very much matching the competitors of 2010. So we've got things like the HTC Incredible, HTC Desire, Nexus One, Sony Ericsson X10, etc., etc. Where the N8 stands out is not so much that it's a Symbian, modern Symbian device, a modern Nokia device that does what the other devices do. Where it stands out is in the hardware and specifically in the camera, because that is its unique selling point. In every other aspect, it is really catching up. It's leveling the playing field, and it's ticking every single box imaginable. But going actually into the camera, you've suddenly got something which is a really, really high quality, and it can... Interestingly, although the megapixel race carries on and people release devices with 8 megapixels here and 5 there and even 12, the actual quality you could add to them is not necessarily commensurate with that baseline specification. With the N8, from the samples we've seen, and with the heritage and the history of the people who actually designed the N8's camera and the N8's optics, the N8 sensor, I think we're going to see something that's really quite special, and that will give it a very, very unique selling point. Also, of course, there is the price, the fact that these other devices are coming in at something like 30% more, certainly if you buy them SIM-free, and I presume they're coming in more per month if you buy them on contract. So those are its two uniques, really. I think the price and the camera.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. I think the price is an important point, because people are already automatically comparing this with the iPhone 4G. I really hope it's not called 4G, because it's such a misuse of the term 4G, but anyway, and also the Android 2.2 devices to come, and indeed, you know, other platforms as well, who knows, future Palm devices, or should I call it HP Palm now. But the N8 actually sits in a competing sort of area that's slightly different to those because of its lower price point, and there its actual hardware stands out, I think, a lot more. What will be interesting to see is if later on we see Nokia produce another Symbian 3 device that's perhaps, you know, higher end. There, after all, is room on the E-series side of things, maybe the N9 as well. And the really high-end stuff is going to come from MeeGo. I mean, Nokia have described that as beyond high-end. So it'll be interesting to see how that all fits together, because this is just the first Symbian 3 device. But the fact we're able to talk about it in the same sentence as all these really high-end smartphones that have been dominating, I think it's fair to say, the sort of web interest in these kind of devices, is a very good sign indeed. I would just underline the fact that its market positioning isn't really against those, you know, €500 devices. It's actually slightly lower down at something like the HTC Legend, for example. And if you do a, you know, base by base comparison with that, actually the N8 looks pretty special, I think.
Yeah, we mentioned before about a possible QWERTY device in this range, or QWERTY Symbian 3 device to be announced fairly shortly. What I'm hoping to see is something perhaps with a 4-inch OLED screen, or perhaps even a 4-inch transflective screen like on the Sony Ericsson X10, which is just stunning, plus the full QWERTY keyboard and the N97-style hinge mechanism. I think that would be a pretty winning communicator, and would have finally put to rest people like me who are still sticking with the E90 3 years after it was launched.
Quick question just before we close this one up. Obviously, the QWERTY keyboard is one of them, but have Nokia missed anything obvious that needs to be in the N8 to compete in the back end of 2010? Rafe?
Well, that's a difficult question. I would say there's perhaps still issues around content on the device as part of the multimedia home. And Nokia has introduced with the N8 something we didn't even talk about in the podcast, Web TV. So that may fill a gap there. There's also the application issue. I think that will be improved by Qt. So it's difficult for me to come up with something just off the top of my head. But
You Nokia apologist, you.
Well, quite, absolutely. But if I had to pick one thing, I think it probably would be in the area of text input. What I'd like to see them do is license something like swipe technology to give that extra boost to touchscreen input, because the sort of standard Symbian way of doing things, with either with a sort of full screen QWERTY keyboard, which doesn't take advantage of the multi-touch, for example, as far as we know, or the sort of T9-esque numeric alphanumeric keyboard when you're in portrait mode, just doesn't really cut it for me for text input. So I think that's where Nokia probably should have paid a little bit more attention.
Same question to Steve.
One thing I would have liked to have seen, and it's not too late for them to license it, is perhaps stick a couple of games on there. Sony Ericsson done that with several of their recent phones, things like the Vivaz and the Satio. And then, for casual gaming, and it's also some of them actually being fairly arcadey, they work really well. The iPhone, as we know, is the king of the phone gaming world, and with that hardware acceleration, there's been great, great titles. We've now got Symbian devices coming out with hardware graphic acceleration. Get a couple of major developers like Polarbit on board. Get two or three cracking 3D, full rendered, full action games actually in the ROMs. Get people playing them and think, oh, look at this. My phone can play this great game. And it's not an iPhone. I just think a few games would really make the platform, make the device.
And I think from my view, I know that there's reasons for staff for not having a replaceable battery in there, but I think at the very least they could maybe, put in some sort of tool or screw or something, so at least there is a way that people can get in and replace the battery at home when the battery dies off of life. I don't mean on a day-to-day use. I mean, it's sort of, if after 9 months you've been hitting it heavily, there's an easy way for you to switch the battery over. Yes, it's in a unibody. You wouldn't want to be doing it every day, but I just think it would be nice just to give a little bit of access into that battery compartment as well. And again, it's not too late for them to consider that one, because I'm sure that the final design, although it's sorted out, they could still change things like the mouldings and such like.
Yeah, okay.
So there we go there. The Nokia N8, obviously leaving some spaces to go for an N9 or an N10 at later date, or even an E9 or an E10. An E9 to an E90 might actually make a lot of sense. Yet again, we still have no idea of their numbering system. It's changed yet again. What we do know is that Nokia never considered themselves out of the game, and now I think everybody else is suddenly realizing, like at the end of the film of MASH, radar's already 50 yards down the pitch with the ball, and there's no opposition near it. Apart from one person who's running very hard to catch up. Nokia have got a lot of people running behind them, but that's what makes this story so interesting, exciting to follow over the next couple of months. Nokia are going to try and get ready for the launch. The competition are going to be bringing up their devices as well. Symbian 3 is going to continue to roll in and do the changes. We're going to be here talking about all the implications, delays to the device to make sure it's stable, how it's going to get out there first in the market. Are any website owners going to just wake up in a deep dark night with a severed horse's head next to them in the morning and a small note written in Finnish? Who knows? What we do know is that we will bring you all of that as it happens at allaboutsymbian.com, both on the website, both through Twitter, and on the Insight podcasts as well. All remains for me to thank our hosts for getting up this early and making me miss a Eurovision song. Thank you to Steve Litchfield.
Thank you, and goodbye. And just say I'm just playing the N8 Dalek game at the moment. What I do is I match up the different colours of N8 with the different colours of Dalek from the recent episode, and I scatter them around in random orders, and I have to pair them up. It's great fun. You should try it.
There we go. Rafe, any other cult games that you've managed to create with the N8?
Well, I don't think so, but obviously I'm missing out. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the extended waffle and special edition of this Insight on the N8. And yes, we will be talking about this one for many weeks to come.
Okay, and I'm away to actually find out if Nicholas Parsons will sell me that bell from just a minute. But for now, thank you all for listening. Comments are welcome, and we shall catch you at your regular time and place on the next All About Symbian Insight podcast. Goodbye.